what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 115 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis. I'm here again with Sean Sears, and we have a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, not even just the trade deadline we've got to talk about. It's plenty of things on the docket for today.
Yeah, I guess first we'll dive into what happened last night and the big controversial call, or I say controversial with like the air quotes. Then we can talk about Cole Hamels making his debut tonight. Second segment, we'll talk about the acquisition the Cubs made yesterday and some positive news on the Yu Darvish front that came out this morning. And then final segment, we'll talk about NL Central and some scary stuff with the Brewers and the way the standings are shaken out. So yesterday, probably one of the most frustrating losses of the season, in my opinion.
Yeah.
John Lester, Lester gave up four runs. The Cubs relied on a three-run homer from Javi Baez just to stay in it. They hit into double plays. They squandered scoring opportunities. They had moments like Wilson Contreras hitting one like a rocket a million miles that hit like off the top of the fence in left center, probably 400 feet. And didn't come around to score. Whereas, you know, the previous inning, was it a David Fries or somebody hit that like low line drive homer like 328 feet. It just got out.
It just slipped over. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just brutal stuff. And that was a 2-run shot. So Justin Wilson came in the bottom of the eighth and gave up a home run for good measure. So the Cubs went into the ninth inning trailing 5-3. Addison Russell hit a double with nobody out to score David Bodie that made it 5-4. It appeared as though he made it safely to third base, and he did initially, but replay overturned the call because essentially he overslid and came off while the tag was on him.
Yeah.
Instead of runner on third, nobody out with Rizzo and whoever, I can't remember who was after Rizzo. Rizzo coming up, I think Zobrist. Rizzo and Zobrist coming up, it was bases empty, one out, and the Pirates pretty easily closed out the victory from there. So tonight's game is Cole Hamels' Cubs debut. He'll face Nick Kingham of the Pittsburgh Pirates, who has a 4.80 ERA in 60 innings this year. In two career starts against the Cubs, he has allowed five earned runs and 12 innings pitched. Hamels has not faced the Pirates since 2016, and he has a 10.23 ERA over his last five starts. So let's get back to Addison Russell. I know Cubs Twitter was, as they always are, incensed by the call. I feel like it was pretty obvious he came off the bag and probably was out, but I never saw an angle that definitively showed that the tag was on him while he was off the bag. And I think that's what a lot of people are upset about. And I can completely understand, like, if New York has an angle that shows that definitively, which if they don't, they should absolutely not be overturning the call. But if they do have that angle, that should be released. Like, they should put that out there, that video, to say, like, this is why we overturned this gigantic call in the ninth inning of a one-run game.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's just kind of like, you know, if you can prove it, why not prove it? If there were no, like, I mean, you can assume that Russell wasn't maintaining, you know, like, I guess, that, whatever, he wasn't maintaining touching the bag. Like, you could see the first hand overslid a little bit. That second hand comes in, it looks like a little bit later, but you don't know for sure. Freeze is blocking the plane of view. So, I mean, unless they've got a camera from, like, left field or, like, somewhere, like, I don't know, like, on the third base side that's got the backside of the bag, there's just like no way you can make that call and be 100% sure that Russell, you know, came off that bag. And I feel like that's why people are getting frustrated, but it's also like, you know, if Russell had just been satisfied with the double, with, you know, the top of the order coming up, it's just like common sense there. Like, you know, I get triple would be nice, but you have no outs and your top three batters coming up. Like, what are you doing?
Right. Yeah. My understanding of the way baseball works is the general rule is you never make the first or third out at third base, and especially not down one in the ninth inning. So I completely agree with you there. You pretty much just, unless it's like an obvious triple, like you could go in standing, you pretty much just wait at second base because you're already in scoring position. And then, you know, maybe Rizzo grounds out in that situation and moves you over to third base, and then Zobrist makes contact, hits a fly ball. You don't know. Like, you got to stop at second. He he should have been able to make it to third. He kind of hesitated around second base trying to pick up the third base coach, I think. He slid in and was safe. So, I mean, it's not like he didn't beat it. It's just he didn't keep contact with the bag. And that's the problem is he didn't stay on. And so that's why he was out.
Yeah, just a brutal play, you know, especially when the Cubs looked like they're going to get some momentum to get called out at third. It pretty much it changed the complexion of that entire inning as Rizzo stepped up to the plate. You know, it's just like a different mindset you have to go into now.
Right. So you can't blame that play on losing the game because, you know, even then you're just trying to tie it essentially. But it was just a bad game overall. It was no fun, especially coming out of one of the few off days they have remaining to play kind of poorly like that is pretty frustrating. And the Pirates, they're in third place. Now they're only six games out. If you take last night's game, you put them eight games out, and then they're playing tonight just to get to seven again. Really, this isn't a must-win series, but I view these two games as you got to split them. You got to keep the Pirates seven out. If you get them to five games back, you make this team that just acquired Keon Kella in the bullpen and Chris Archer for the rotation. You put this team in a position where they feel like they can win the division. And, you know, just like a month ago, they were way out of it. So you just can't let them back in.
Yeah, tonight's win is huge. They've got to pull it out. They've got to split. They've got to pretty much, you know, take a game or two in almost every series that they face in the NL Central, at least when it comes to the Brewers and the Pirates, just because it's, I mean, the Cubs are really, they're just, it's not like they're running on fumes here. It just seems like I have no idea. It's so weird because they come in and have games where they, you know, play fantastic. And like that Sunday night game, it was a great game. The Cubs pulled it together, were able to hold it together after they scored the runs. And, you know, that was Cub baseball. But this last game and these couple games before that with the Cardinals, just, you know, disappointing.
Yeah. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. And we're going to talk a little bit more in the third segment about the Central and some stats on the standings going forward. But, you know, very early in the early days of this podcast, when I was doing it by myself, often I harped at the notion that the Cubs lost that series with the Dodgers last year because the Dodgers won so many games and they were able to rest down the stretch and they went into the postseason. You know, obviously their bullpen was just, you know, very refreshed, whereas the Cubs were just worn out in general. And my theory on that is that the Cubs needed to be able to get into the postseason refreshed this year if they wanted a chance at winning the World Series. And I'm torn on how I want to feel about that now, because I feel like there is zero chance the Cubs get into the postseason rested at this point. They're going to be waxed down the stretch. They have five off games left, or five off days left. That's not very many.
And no,
you can blame the early bad weather for that, kind of taking away all their off days. But I just don't see how the Cubs, now tied in first place with 2 months left on August 1st, I don't see how they end up in the postseason winning the division and having rested their roster.
Yeah, no, it doesn't happen, unfortunately. And that was a big key for the Cubs in 2016, be able to win that division essentially with a month left of baseball. They pretty much could rest everyone. I mean, everyone was fresh, including like Lester and Arrieta and all those guys. But the bullpen looked great too. So I don't know. It's the nice thing is they did acquire some guys. We'll talk about that in the second segment, and that hopefully they can take the load off. They do, I guess, when Darvish comes back, technically have like seven starters now. So, I mean, you know, maybe rest some guys here and there, but, you know, it's not like the guys we're getting back are spring chickens either. So, I mean, it's just, they're in a tough spot. They really need to take advantage of this early and get themselves in a position where they can kind of control the division, but now it's just an all-out brawl.
Yeah, and they acquired Cole Hamels for situations like tonight. They have to keep the Pirates at arm's distance, I think, and tonight would be the way to do it. Win tonight, put them back to seven games out. You check off two games from the schedule from head-to-head, which really hurts them. You got Hamels on the mound. You're tied in first place. It's the beginning of the stretch run. Tonight is, I don't want to say must win, but I feel like for the psyche of the team and for keeping the Pirates, farther away than they would like to be, And just for like the sanity of the fans, I feel like tonight is you got to win tonight.
Yeah, just for the sake of me having to scroll through Twitter later tonight after a loss, yeah. I please win. Just do me a solid. Please win, Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think about it this way. If you win tonight with Hamels on the mound and Hamels looks good, everyone's like, all right, you know, maybe we're still tied in first, or maybe we're only a game up. But, you know, the Pirates are still 7 games back, and we're 7-7 since the All-Star break. You can deal with that. Let's say Hamels goes out and gives you, you know, 3 1/3 innings, 6 earned runs, and the Cubs lose 6-1. I can only imagine what kind of dumpster fire Twitter is going to be. And, you know, kind of rightfully so. I mean, this team has not been good for a while, and you got to get that point where you go on that run.
Yeah, it just like the worst time to really get hung up on some just bad baseball play. And that's really what it is. I mean, it's not like it's an overarching like Cubs are terrible. It's just like some bad games, and they just seem to be coming at once here. And, you know, I was concerned even when they were coming from behind with all these wins and stuff. I know some of them were like, oh, you know, they gave up a run in the first inning and then they won 6-5 or 6-1 or something like that. It's just like, okay, you know, it doesn't count as a comeback win. But like they've got so many of these games where they have, you know, pulled together a walk-off win, or, you know, scored 3 runs in the eighth, or, you know, those type of games. And it's great to see those, but when that's consistently how you're winning, that's a red flag. And I think we're seeing the Cubs not being able to grind out these games.
Yeah. I don't remember the last time the Cubs came out very early in a game and put up like 4 or 5 runs on another team and went up 4-0 and really like put the other team behind the eight ball instead of themselves. I don't remember a time recently where they did that. And if they did, it's probably like once in their last 20 games or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Hamels tonight. We'll see what he has. Hopefully it's much better than his last few starts. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, 10.23 ERA in his last 5 starts. But prior to that, he had a 3.41 ERA for the Rangers. Talked to him in St. Louis. He doesn't seem worried about it. Jesse Chavez didn't seem worried about it. He had seen him pitch all year. His thought on it was kind of like, when he was going poorly, it was just kind of like that one pitch in that one spot that really got him. So his velocity's not down. His stuff is still good, according to scouts. So there's no reason to believe Hamels can't be good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hopefully Cole Hamels has got to come out and be the guy. It sounds like everyone's confident. And we saw Jesse Chavez come over from the same place and be successful. It's different, I guess, for a starter when you're going to go hopefully 5-6 innings. But yeah, I mean, Arlington's a hitter's park. From what I've heard, like the grass is a lot shorter or something like that. The ball slides a lot faster. So, I mean, you know, hopefully coming to Wrigley, this should be the type of adjustment he wants. He's always wanted a pitch here. So he's excited. He seems like a dude that's going to be amped up and ready to go for, you know, a chance to be on a postseason club.
Yeah, that seems like how it's going to happen, but we'll see. Let's go ahead and go to our second segment. We can talk a little bit about the other guy the Cubs acquired. So Brandon Kinsler, this is a guy who was a reliever for the Washington Nationals. They acquired him at the trade deadline last year from the Minnesota Twins. This is somebody that has had success this year, has had success in the past. And as far as I could dig in on him, I'm not 100% sure how he's so good.
Yeah, his peripherals are kind of confusing.
Yeah, he just is, I think, is the best answer. He used to be a really good ground ball pitcher. This year it's under 50%. It's at 48% ground balls, which is good, not like great for a guy who doesn't strike anybody out. Career-wise, he's a low walk guy, low strikeout guy. This year, 2.7 walks per nine, which is okay. 6.5 strikeouts per nine, which is, you know, not great. It's just I don't know what to say about this guy other than he generally is good. 3.59 ERA in 42 2/3 innings this year. He gives up almost a hit per inning, but he has only walked 13, struck out 31. Last year with the Nationals, 3.46 ERA, total 3.03 ERA. He was an all-star for the Minnesota Twins last year. As their closer, I think he had 28 saves and 32 chances in like half a season. So
yeah,
I don't know what we should be expecting from him or what the Cubs plan to do with him. There was kind of a theory when I was in St. Louis that the Cubs, if they were trading for a reliever, were going to try and get somebody with closing experience, because there was a lot of murmuring that Brandon Morrow really won't be back anytime soon. So this is a guy with closing experience, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could call it that. I mean, he's not the typical, you know, closer dominating stuff with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball type of guy. But, I mean, looking at some of just his contact rate number, I mean, like, he's giving up, like, 30% hard contact rate. Or, no, excuse me, 31, sorry. I'm looking at the opposite field hit rate. Yeah, about 31% hard contact rate. Soft contact, about 25%. I mean, that's okay. Yeah. His FIP is at 422 this year. I mean, he's a career, like, 62% ground ball guy. Or, sorry, 56. Gosh, I keep reading all the wrong percentages. Curse you, Fangraphs. But, yeah, I mean, like, he's career-wise, he's a guy that usually puts the ball on the ground and, you know, keeps the ball in the infield. The ball's still not flying that hard. He's given up. He's getting BABIP a decent amount, close to 300 BABIP average there. I mean, that's like you said, it doesn't really make sense. The numbers don't really, you know, translate to a really good pitcher. But 3.59 ERA, doesn't walk a lot of guys. He forces guys to hit his pitch, it seems like, and hopefully it goes in the ground and the Cubs can turn some double plays or get some easy outs.
Yeah, so here's the big question I have for Kinsler at this point. Who leaves the roster for him today? That's a good question, I think, because you either have to DL somebody or you have to send down Randy Rosario or you have to DFA somebody. And I don't know. I mean, if it were me, I'd probably either send down Rosario or DFA Brian Dunsing. But pretty much everyone else on the roster, you've kind of packed the roster at this point with guys who aren't exactly expendable.
Yeah, I mean, those are the two options, I think, and those are the two guys I would assume probably need to, you know, maybe leave the roster. I don't know if you necessarily DFA Dunsing because he's on a 2-year deal, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
So I'm assuming probably Randy Rosario bumps back to Iowa, which, you know, is a bummer because he has pitched well, but I think clearly Kinsler is probably the more proven commodity. So,
yeah, I think you probably ride it out a little longer with Dunsing, but he's just not been good, and I don't think you can trust him at all. He doesn't have a very rich contract, let's say. Maybe he has, like $3 or $4 million left on his deal. I can't remember how much he signed for. But I don't remember.
Really quick. But, yeah, you're right in the ballpark. It's not like it's an expensive deal. It's not like the Tyler Chatwood where, like, people are demanding he get DFA, and it's like, well, DFA, you know, $29 million, but whatever. What do I know? But, yeah, I mean, he's a guy – I think just because the season he had last year, too, I mean, he turned into one of Madden's most dependable guys towards the end of the year. I mean, he was pinching in the postseason as opposed to someone like Justin Wilson, who didn't even make the roster or for the second, you know, the NLDS. But, yeah, he's making 3.5 next year.
Okay, so you got whatever is left this year that you would DFA plus 3.5 million. I don't think
– I mean, obviously, that's not going to keep – yeah, that's not going to keep them from DFAing them. I mean, they'll do it if they need to, especially when you just upgrade to Kinsler, who's, you know, probably a higher pedigree of reliever. I guess we could call it that. He's more proven, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, and he's got a $5 million player option next year. There's a $10 million team option that will not be picked up, I'm sure. But yeah, $5 million player option. So you could have him back at a reasonable price for a decent reliever. In theory, unless he really thinks he can get better than that on the open market, which maybe he can.
Yeah, potentially, maybe. I don't know. I mean, he's been solid, and he was an all-star last year. I just don't know. I mean, if you're looking at closing options, I'm not paying Kinsler closing money to be my closer.
No, not at all. Yeah, Brandon Morrow, probably not coming back real soon, I don't think.
Well, yeah, that's disappointing. But.
Yeah, but... Darvish, Jim Hickey, I think, was on the radio this morning, talked about Darvish, said that he has a sim game next, didn't say what day, I don't think, which isn't too surprising, but he threw 35 pitches yesterday in a bullpen, completely pain-free, which is following up on that 23-pitch bullpen session where he changed something mechanically and was pain-free. So this is the first time he's been pain-free consistently throwing pitches, so sim game next. He continues to be pain-free. I would assume that a rehab start would follow. And then, who knows, maybe Yu Darvish back on the mound after that. So I would think at this point, optimistically, we're 2 weeks away. And pessimistically, we're maybe a month or never.
A month or never. I know, I mean, people were asking Darvish, was it yesterday, about whether or not they thought he'd be back Or at least I saw in articles yesterday. He said that he felt like he would, you know, be able to return to the team at some point. I know Chris Bryant was like literally like, yeah, no, I'll be back. Yeah. So that made me very happy. But yeah, I mean, Darvish, like you said, but we talked about yesterday in the podcast, he is kind of controlling his rehab and, you know, he's kind of guiding this situation. So if he's feeling comfortable and confident, I know he made some joke that Rizzo told him he loved him yesterday and he wasn't sure about if he meant it or something like that. So, I mean, he's in good spirits. He's surprisingly very funny.
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's good news. And I think, you know, if he's been able to do these bullpen sessions and this consistently now, because before it was like he would throw and then we didn't have an update for 2 weeks and then he would like work out and it was like, oh, well, we don't know how he's doing. So is good news. This is good news. Something tangible at least.
Yeah. And then from there, you got to hope that he pitches well, but that's a totally different conversation.
Yeah. That's the part we haven't even gotten to yet.
Yeah. You just got to hope that he pitches well. I think that's probably it for segment two. I know segment three is usually our short segment, but I feel like we have more to talk about there. So why don't we go ahead and go to segment three? So last night, obviously, the Cubs lost, and the news gets even worse from there. The Brewers offense squeaked out just one run, but it was good enough for a 1-0 victory over the Los Angeles Dodgers. Wade Miley, 7 innings, 2 hits allowed, no runs. Wade Miley.
I was looking at the box score before we jumped on the podcast, and I was just like, who are these guys? Like, how did the Brewers get these guys to go 7th innings? And we've got Jose Quintana who can't navigate his way through the 1st inning. It's just like, what is this shenanigans?
yeah, following him up is Joaquin Soria, who had a good inning, clean inning, and then Jeremy Jeffress closed it out. We'll talk about Soria a little bit in a minute, but the Pirates won, of course. The Cardinals lost 6-3 to the Rockies. The Reds lost 2-1 to the Tigers. So the updated standings are the Cubs and Brewers are tied in first place. Chicago is 61-45, while the Brewers are 63-47. So percentage points ahead and still technically with the best record in the National League, but man, does the National League suck. The Pirates are now just 6 games out at 56-52. The Cardinals remain 7.5 out at 54-53. The Reds are 48-59, 13.5 out. So the Brewers, they acquired Soria, Mike Moustakas, and Jonathan Scope. They're moving Travis Shaw to second base part-time. Yeah. I think he's probably playing some second, some third. Scope is going to play some second. Moustakas will be in there. They've got a lot of guys to rotate in and out. Council was talking yesterday about how, you know, it's 55 games left and they'll find enough at bats, but not everybody's going to play all 55, obviously. Right. So they've improved their roster. I pulled up some stuff on Scope because I think a lot of people will look at him and be like, well, he's having a really down year. And, you know, last year he had 32 home runs, 105 RBI, had a really good season. This year it's been really bad, but I think he has, 244 batting average, 273 on base, which is terrible, 447 slugging. But since the start of July, he has a 360 batting average, a 356 on base, which is impressive to have the lower on base than the batting average, 700 slugging, and 9 home runs in the month of July. So this is a guy they're getting who is red hot. So they're adding him. They're adding Moustakas. They're adding another quality reliever to one of the better bullpens in the game. They're tied in first place. I don't feel great about where the Cubs are right now. The Brewers have, I think I said this before, 5 off days in the month of August. The Cubs have 5 the rest of the season. The Brewers have 9 total. So look at this however you like, but I don't see it through an optimistic lens right now.
I don't either. I think the one thing that I was what didn't make sense to me about Shope is Shope, however you say his last name, Jonathan Scope.
Scope.
Yeah, Scope. Thank you. I always want to call him Shoop. Jonathan Scope. He's playing shortstop for the Brewers. It sounds like that's where he's primarily going to be. And I mean, he's not a necessarily great defender. I don't know if that necessarily counts towards anything. I mean, right now I know he's at second base, he's costing them 1 defensive run. He's only played like 3 innings at short this year. He's not great. And I know the justification in my head was like, well, you know, at least they didn't acquire any pitching and they downgraded defensively at shortstop with you know, scope, and he could potentially cost them runs. I don't know. That was me just trying to be as positive as I could. But yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, these are good bats. You know, the reason that the Brewers are doing this is because they need these extra bats in their lineup. And like you said, Council's going to find a way to make this work. He's a smart guy. He'll bounce it out and get the right guys in when they need to. And, you know, just to have a guy like Moustakas on the bench at moments, or like even just like Travis Shaw on the bench in moments, is huge now. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, the Brewers are very much real, even if they didn't acquire a Chris Archer type guy.
Yeah, I took down this note as well. This is the one thing that's pointing in the Cubs' direction. They have eight head-to-head games left. Five of them are in Chicago, and of the Cubs' remaining 55 games, 29 are against teams currently 500 or under. The Brewers have 18 games against teams 500 or under. And if you want to count the Giants, who are 55 and 54, so one game over, that would be 21 games for the Brewers. So the Cubs have an easier schedule the rest of the way, but Brewers have more off days. They play their home games inside a air-conditioned dome instead of out in the blazing sun of Wrigley Field. They're tied in first place. They just acquired some really good players. The Cubs did too, but it just... I'm being negative today. It doesn't feel good. To me, the odds of this team like holding a World Series trophy at the end of this year, they just feel like so minuscule at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is for the Cubs, they're still up with like three games in the wild card, so they're still technically playoff eligible. I mean, of course, they're tied for first. It's not like they're out of the division or anything like that. But yeah, it's tough to feel positive, especially the way the teams have been playing. On top of like a team like the Pirates, who are just incredibly hot, the Brewers, who were playing so-so baseball like the Cubs were for the first part of the second half, but just acquired three really good bats and some solid pitching. They've got some depth now, that's for sure, and some reliable depth. So the Cubs are really just, I mean, it's going to depend on, I mean, Chris Bryant's got to get back and be the guy. The Cubs offense has to find itself a little bit here, and the pitching has to go 5-6 innings, even if it is 4-run baseball. The Cubs have shown they have the ability to fight back and don't give up on themselves in these games, but it's going to be impossible if Victor Caratini's coming in the seventh inning because you're already down 7-0. Like, it's just, it can't happen anymore.
No, you can't do that anymore. As much as I love position players pitching, I don't want to see the Cubs do it a single time the rest of the year. You just can't. What did Lester go 5 innings with 100 pitches yesterday?
Yeah,
you just can't. You can't have that. You need. It was 5 innings, 4 earned runs. He had a couple kind of crappy things that happened. That 328-foot home run over the right field wall or left field wall. That was crap. But I mean, at this point, you can't even have the bad luck. You can't have bad luck. You need good luck at this point. You need the players to be good, and you also need the luck to be good.
We need some magic.
Somebody call El Mago.
Yeah.
He tried his best last night. Yeah, he tried his best. He was he had 3 hits the day before or the game before in St. Louis, and then yesterday with the 3-run homer. Javi's been good, but man, lately it's been really hard to find any players other than him that have been consistently good on offense.
Right. I mean, you can't just rely on a 3-run home run from Javi Baez every game. You know, like Rizzo and Javi have been the two guys that have really been driving in runs via the home run right now. And that's great, but God, can we put some people on base in front of them? I mean, Javi hit a 3-run shot yesterday, but it's been solo shots for those days. It seems like back and forth. And
yeah.
Gosh, get on base, people. I don't know what to tell you. Do the things where you stand on the base and then Rizzo hits it over the fence. That's the play we should be calling like every time.
Yeah, I forgot Rizzo. Rizzo has been good lately, but you touched on something that's been a problem all season. The Cubs don't hit homers with runners on base. In general, they haven't been a big home run hitting team overall, but when they do hit homers, they're generally solo shots. I know that the 1-run homer is the much more common of the different types, but for this team, especially when Javi hit that three-run homer yesterday, first thing I thought was, man, when was the last time they hit a 3-run homer? That's it feels exactly like so long
what
ago.
I said. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't think I remember seeing a multiple home run since like April. I mean, that's not true, but
they had a really long stretch earlier this year. I can't remember how long it ended up being, but I was keeping track of like how many games it had been since the Cubs hit a 2-run homer or a 3-run or a grand slam. And it ended up being like a really long, long stretch. And I feel like it's been kind of that way recently. I know they've hit like a couple 2-run homers here and there, but legitimately a 3-run homer. I cannot remember the last time they had it happen. And even yesterday when Javi did it, it just tied the game. So
yeah,
it's not like it won the game for them or put them ahead even.
No, I'm sure if we subtracted walk-off home runs, I feel like the Cubs in the go-ahead home run category would be probably very low at this point. The nice thing is, though, I mean, like the Cubs have always been a team that's dependent on the power and the home run ball, and at least they were significantly last year. I feel like this year, if the Cubs can position themselves and figure out their bearings and pull together, I mean, they're built to be successful in the postseason to this point with the way they have been hitting when their offense does click. It's not a ton of power, but a lot of guys punching balls through and making good contact. And, you know, Joe talked about inversing the lineup with Hayward and Zobrist at 3 and 4 sometimes. I like what they were doing when they were scoring these runs because it made sense. You know, you're lacking this power, so why not, you know, put the guys with the high on base, forget about the power, and just keep, you know, knocking people over to the next base. And it works sometimes, but then other times the Cubs just, I don't know if they're just not being aggressive enough or too aggressive or whatever, but all of a sudden it's like, well, we've gone 7 innings with 2 hits and no one has come up to the plate with a runner on base in 3 innings. What is going on?
Right, yeah, or you have those games where it's like, okay, and now they're getting into the 8th inning and they've had like 6 hits, but, you know, like it's a leadoff double that gets stranded at third, or a leadoff walk or a leadoff single that you know, never moves to second base. Like, you have these games where it's like, okay, and now we have one run and we're down 4-1. And, you know, the offense is inconsistent, and that's been a problem all year, but the pitching is really the problem. The starting pitching just has to be better than it has been. And it's not a situation where they just don't have good pitchers and they needed to go out and get good pitchers. They have good pitchers that just aren't performing. And that's even more frustrating, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the Cubs have shown they can overcome from these. They can come from behind and win. They don't give up on themselves. But if you have a pitcher go out and, you know, basically ruin this game from the start, it's really tough, especially when you haven't even batted yet and you're down 4-0, 5-0, 7-0. Those are all scores that Cubs have been down in the last week and a half. You know, like, that's just it's just such a mental mind hurdle that you have to go across. It's so early in the game, and you know, you have plenty of time to overcome it, but it's just like, it changes the complexion and the composure of the players in the game itself. It's just a different animal when you come into the plate and you're already down 4 runs, or even just down a run. It's tough. So
Well, I think that's all we have to complain about today.
Yeah,
I knew we were going to have kind of a rough podcast today because of the way they lost last night, the fact that the Brewers, you know, they were down, what, 3.5 games, what feels like maybe 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago, they were down 3.5 games. It felt like the Cubs were in position to really take off and build up a lead, and now here they are tied again. The Pirates are within striking distance. It doesn't feel good right now.
Yeah, there's plenty to feel good about. We're just not feeling it right now because we're more concerned about the negatives at this point.
Right, and who knows? Maybe the Brewers go get waxed tonight and Cole Hamels throws a no-hitter and we feel just like all positive and rosy tomorrow. But right now, I just serenity now. I want to get the bad feelings make me sweaty. I don't like it.
Serenity now.
All right, well, that's it for us on episode 115 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis. You can find me at Bet Chicago and also at NBC Sports Chicago periodically, at The Athletic MLB periodically, here pretty much every day. And that's Sean. You can find him at NBC Sports Chicago. You can hear him on this podcast. You can also hear him on the 312 podcast, and you can read him at FanSided. I think that's it for us.